Okay, my friends, so in the third reading of Parshas Ki Tzetze, we start off with a pasuk about safety, safeguarding one's property, and the Torah immediately turns its attention towards forbidden mixtures. In general, Parshas Ki Tzetze is like that, just like issue after issue after issue. So the Torah says like this, with regard to forbidden mixtures, chapter 22, Perek Chav Beis, pasuk Tes, verse 9. You shall not plant your vineyard in a forbidden mixture. Kilayim means a mixture, or a forbidden mixture. Why should you not do this? Pen tikdash. I'm going to translate that very literally, and then we'll talk about it. Literally sounds less it becomes holy, because the word hegdish, the word kodesh, is employed here. Hamaleya hazera. Lest that which becomes full, the fullness of growth, ends up becoming a source of... holiness is a really bad translation, of course. So we'll talk about a source of that which is untouchable, or that which is off limits. Because that's really the source of the word sacred or holy, that which is separated. Asher tizra, which you have planted. V'tvua sakerem. It's the zera, hazera, asher tizra, the seed that you have planted. V'tvua sakerem. And the tvua, the grain of the vineyard. Well, let's take a look in Rashi if we get some direction over here. So, the first word that Rashi is going to explain is the word kilayim. The Torah is not talking about any mixture. It doesn't say lesizra kilayim. It doesn't say you shall not mix anything. And kilayim is mixture. Because it says clearly lesizra karmacha kilayim. You shall not plant your vineyard. So what are we talking about here? This is the prohibition which is known as Kilai HaKerem, which incidentally is far more severe than the prohibition of the other forbidden mixtures. And Rashi says that the way you would violate this prohibition is Chita, Usa'ira, V'chartza, a bulb or seed of wheat, of barley, and a grape seed. And this would be planted b'mapoilas yod, in one handful. So in other words, there was a hole in the ground, and you empty a handful. In one handful, you have the wheat, the barley, and the grape seed going into the hole.
Is the wheat and barley okay to go?
Wheat and barley, we're not talking about now.
No, yeah. But isn't that a mixture too?
No, it's not actually.
No.
The grains are grains. I shouldn't say that really. The truth is you're not supposed to do that either. But that's the truth is that all of in Eretz Yisrael, all the grains have to be separated. That's the truth. The Kilai HaKerem is more severe. So here, when you do this, you would violate the general prohibition of Kilayim in Eretz Yisrael, but that is according to most Rishonim, so that you're not allowed to plant all kinds of seeds together. And the second prohibition is that you're planting it together with a grape seed. So now I know what kilayim is. Kilayim is a specific kind of forbidden mixture. We're alluding to a second kind of forbidden mixture, which is the forbidden mixture of the wheat and the barley, which also one is not allowed to do. But here we're talking about a kilayim, a full-on forbidden mixture, which is wheat and barley, but mapoilus yad in a single handful, together with grape seed.
It's a double avera.
It's a double avera, that's correct. So that's the kilayim, that's the forbidden mixture we're talking about. Why should you not do this? Pentikdash. This is not a good thing. You say, holiness is good. Well, most of the time. There could be a holiness which is unwholesome and unholy. So why is it called holy? So Rashi says, take a look in the Targum. Unkelus renders it, tistoav. Tistoav kind of comes, it's the Aramaic word for abomination. Or that which is abominable, or reprehensible, or deplorable. Something which is off limits. I don't have anything to do with that. Kol davar. I'm not getting into political discourse over here.
Could be.
That was not a barb at
deplorable
at anybody's particular comments. Although comments like that are deplorable. So tistoev means kol davar hanisav al ha'odam. Anything which a person finds reprehensible, anything which a person finds abominable, disgusting. That comes from that terminology. Now, the truth is that when something is abominable or deplorable, it's off limits. I don't want to deal with that. It's just, ugh, it's, like, it's, all, it's just like, keep it away from me. Keep it away from me. So the, Rashi says that could be Bein L'Shevach, that could be in a good way, because it's so special, it's too good for me. Or it could be in the opposite way. L'Shevach would be Hegdash, that which is designated for use in the Beis HaMikdash, that's for Hashem's use. I never touch that. That's not for me. That would be sacrilege. Bein lignai, or it could be something in a negative sense. Kigoyin dvar isur, something which is either reprehensible, deplorable because of its impurity, or because it represents something which is a contravention to what we consider to be right, righteous and decent and according to the perspective of Torah. So Rashi's telling us that in either of these situations, neifel b'lashon kiddush, the word kodesh, which in Hebrew, in its rawest form, means kadosh, means muvdal, separated, taken out of circulation, pushed aside, something I don't want to get involved with, something I'm not comfortable with. So whether I get the heebie-jeebies because it's too good, or I get the heebie-jeebies because it's too disgusting, the point in both is the same. I'm hands off. I'm not going to deal with that. Like it says, Rashi here brings an example. I mean, the big chiddush, the big novelty of this Rashi is that you could have a negative connotation of holiness. How many people would believe you? He said, how could holiness be negative? Look at you, what are you talking about? Holiness is negative?
But it's only holiness when it's in the positive. It's not negative.
That's why I said this is a really bad, bad English translation. Because in English, the word holy only has one translation. Holy is only really good. You can't have holy, bad holy and good holy. But in Hebrew, which is not English, the word hegdish, or the word kodesh, in and of itself, does not mean necessarily good or positive. And that's why we have to say kodesh la Hashem. Kodesh means designated or separated for Hashem, which means there could be something designated or separated in the opposite way. And Rashi brings proof, because everybody's familiar with the idea of kedusha being good. So he brings you a proof. And this is from the Pasuk in Yeshayo, in the 65th chapter in the beginning. The person who is tameh, the person who is ritually impure, says to the person who is ritually pure, Al tigashbi ki kidashticha. Don't touch me, for you have sanctified me. You didn't sanctify. It should be the other way around. It should be the person who's impure should be saying, you're sanctified. Instead he says, kidashticha, you've made me sanctified. But it doesn't mean sanctified in the English parlance. It means off limits.
Hegdash could only be for the good though.
Hegdash la Hashem. Somebody could be makdish, chas v'shalom, something for Avodah Zarah. In other words, this notion that all religions have to be good. It's not true. You could have religion that's good, that's godly, that's goodly, that's righteous, and you could have religion that's horrible, that's terrible, that's disgusting.
Islam.
I didn't say nothing. I'm just saying. The term religion doesn't, people say, well, either you're for religion or against religion. I'm for the worship of God. I'm not for the worship of demons. I'm not for fascism. I'm not for violence. I'm not for murder and mayhem. And if that's what your religion is, find a new religion. I don't know. That's not the terminology of religious or faith system could be good or bad. It's like somebody saying, I have faith. Faith in what? Germans had faith in Hitler. Does that make that good? No, faith is not a good thing necessarily. It depends what you have faith in. So just like for most of us, we understand that the concept of faith can go two ways, although usually in English when you say the faith community, you're talking about people who are religious, and the assumption is that religious is good, or righteous, or kind, or compassionate, or sensitive, and so it should be. It's possible for it to go the other way too. The most famous example of the idea of kadosh being the opposite of what you call holy is that that is the very same word that the Torah uses for a prostitute.
Yeah, kadesh.
It's called a kadesha. Because that's not a, people say, it's just a, it's a profession. That's not a profession. That is a defining hallmark. It's not like a dentist, a lawyer, a prostitute. No. There's things people do, and then there's something which self-defines. It's like, I would never have anything to do with that person. Why? Why? Because that's the meaning of kadesha. That's not something I would have anything to deal with. I'm sorry, that's off limits. So that's the terminology the Torah uses for this kind of forbidden mixture. The Torah says, pen tikdash. Pen tikdash, Rashi says, ha-maleya. What does it mean, maleya? Zeh, this idea of maleya, is a euphemism. It's a euphemism for the development or growth of this forbidden planting, milui, v'teisefes sha'azera meisif, when the seed becomes more than seed, the seed actually turns into something which grows, so it's meleya, its potential is unfurled, because before it was just a seed. Now that it was just a seed, all of a sudden becomes, from being a seed, it now is, its potential is unleashed, unlocked. It became from a tiny seed, all of a sudden, meleya. It got, like the accordion opened. So, oh wow, this little seed is capable of opening something larger. So the Torah says, that's bad stuff. Stay away. That's the first volley, the first concept of the prohibited mixture, is the notion of kalai hakerem. Now Rashbam disagrees with Rashi. It's not so simple that the terminology holy could turn out to be negative. In fact, Rashbam understands it in a more literal level. He says that it means just like kodshim is usur, just like you're not allowed to touch something which is designated for use in the base of Mikdash, so too you wouldn't be allowed to touch this. But Rashi is not satisfied with that. Rashi says no. The terminology has to be applied fully. And therefore Rashi says you could have kodesh which is good and kodesh which is not a good thing.
Is this a chok?
Is it a chok?
Because when you talk about plowing with a donkey and an ox, that kind of makes sense. You understand why it would be cruel.
I mean, the answer would be on a simple level, yes, it's a chok. Yeah. On a non-simple level, maybe it's not such a chok. Maybe you're tampering with creation.
We do that all the time.
But it really is like a chok, because the Maharal writes, some Rishonim say that any kind of tampering with realities that Hashem created is automatically forbidden. But the Maharal says that when you do something which Torah prohibits, if Torah prohibits it, Torah prohibits it. But Maharal says, if it's not prohibited by Torah, means it's not Kelai Kerem or other kind of Kelayim, so then he says, on the contrary. That's man's or humankind's purpose is to tame nature, right, to harness nature. Right? And the Rebbe seems to follow the approach of the Maharal, which is the other Rishonim. They learn pshat, no, like it's not a good thing, but the Maharal seems to say very clearly that actually the things that the Torah says are prohibited are prohibited. Prohibited is prohibited. But the idea is not intrinsically something which is anathema. If a person could use it in a good way, other than on the contrary, what do you think Hashem created it for? We don't spurn science. So Ramban says that the idea of tikdash has to be understood here as a verb. It's not a noun. Rashi takes it more in the noun form. Rambam expands it to be more like a verb. He says, when it will grow in such a fashion, that will be tikdash. I don't think Ramban is arguing with Rashi. I think Ramban is developing from Rashi. Rashi just defines the word. Ramban adds that the text or the tense can also go beyond simply the meaning of the word. The tense is dynamic, active. Tikdash is, it's growing in a prohibited fashion. So when it grows in a prohibited fashion, that itself is prohibited. And interestingly, if somebody does it by accident, and then he notices it, he has a sacred duty, a Torah duty, to immediately remove it. What if he doesn't, and he allows it to continue to grow? That's tikdash. That's what Ramban is saying. Then it's further growing in this manner of tikdash. Again, and that's not different than Rashi, it's just he's addressing a different point.
So is the avera when he drops the seeds?
Or yeah, the avera be when you drop the seeds. And that's why Rashi doesn't say what the Ramban says. Because the prohibition is dropping the seeds, and even if you drop the seeds and somebody else digs them up after,
you still
did an avera. And it's true, the avera is pen tikdash, lest it will happen. But you did the prohibited act. The Torah comes along now and says a second form of kilayim. A second form of forbidden mixture. Do not plow with an ox and a donkey harnessed in unison. So Rashi says, do not understand this to be literal as we did verse 9. That verse 9 was quite literal. It's talking specific that the most egregious form of the prohibited mixture in planting, in farming, is when it involves the vineyard, the grape seed. That's literal. It's exact. But he says when it comes to the notion of yoking two different kinds of animals together, don't take this in the literal form. Only these and not others. Hu hadin, the same would apply l'chol shnei minim shebo'ilam. Any two species in the world. These are illustrative. Hu hadin la'anigam yachtav. yachad, kshurim, if you would to lash or tie them together, somehow yoke them together, that they should be zugim, like a pair, b'hilachas shum masa, in the taking of any kind of weight, that would be a prohibition. And indeed, the Gemara tells us if a person were to harness an animal on shore and a giant fish in a river and have the plow pulled, that would also be prohibited.
I'd like to see it.
The Torah didn't give that example. Torah Shebaal Peh is that example. Well, it could be. I mean, porpoises don't grow in fresh water, but it could be somebody harnesses a large fish.
What about a person with an animal?
A person should not be yoked, period.
No, but let's say it's your farm. Let's say one of your animals is down. You have to get it plowed. People have done that.
That's two different species.
Well, the thing is like this. The thing is, this is not entirely like a chok. This actually has a rhyme and reason to it. And therefore, with a person, you'll see it's probably not going to apply. Why? Because people are capable of transcending their nature. We are capable of compromising. Sometimes people behave like animals, and they don't. But a normal person is capable of adjusting himself to somebody else's needs and doing something which is appropriate for somebody else, even though it's uncomfortable or causes some kind of discomfort. Like the Ibn Ezra says, that the prohibition, the root source of this idea, is that Hashem has mercy on all of his creations, and therefore, he doesn't want to cause pain for one and onto the other. The Rambam in Mer Nevuchim has a very interesting take on this. He said it's not about the yoking or planting at all. It's not about farming. He says it's what it will lead to. It's what it will lead to. Because once you yoke them together, you put them together, eventually they're going to end up maybe being more together in intimate fashion, and that would be a full-on prohibition. But this is the Rambam in Mer Nevuchim, and the other Pashtani HaMikra, the Rambam in Mer Nevuchim is talking philosophically, but the Pashtani HaMikra do not follow this approach at all, actually.
Ibn
Ezra says it's the idea of mercy, and that's what the Sefer HaChinuch says. The Sefer HaChinuch elaborates in great detail, and he says, this is the concept of tsar ba'al lechaim. You're causing pain for the animal. And he says this causes a great deal of distress for the animal, because the Torah says that every animal has his shtick, and every animal lives within his own framework. So if you force an animal to try to follow the pace or style or syntax of another animal, you just cause them pain. And they get very nervous. He says you cause them daigo gdola, give them great anxiety. And what happens is, when you even put them together, if you kind of put them in the same stall together, you give them anxiety already. Put the horses with horses, put the cows with cows, put the donkeys with donkeys. When you put them together, they get nervous. So he says, imagine then how nervous, how much anxiety you cause them when they're planting together. The Chizkuni, explains this almost in a... maybe the Ibn Ezra is saying what the Chizkuni says. Chizkuni says that how does the cow eat? The cow is maligated. The cow regurgitates, ruminates. So it eats, sends it back to the stomach, and then it chews it again. And then it chews it up, sends it back to the stomach, and then sends it back and chews it again. Ruminates back and forth till it finally swallows. How does the donkey eat? Straight on, straight. No problem. Just knocks it down. So what happens is, you have one chewing, and the other one is never hungry. Mm-hmm. Well, the donkey's waiting. He said, would you finish your meal already? It's like, put two people together. Maybe the animals intuitively have manners, or they're stuck in the same place, and now donkey wants to move to the next place where there's some more grass, but the cow is happy. The cow's busy regurgitating and ruminating and chewing again and again. So that causes the idea of discomfort. Incidentally, Ramban and Rabbeinu Bechaya do follow the approach of Meir Nevuchim, and they say that ultimately this could bring to harba.
What about sharing the load?
What about sharing the load?
Yeah, if they're different animals, different structure, it's not going to be evenly shared. Right?
That's the problem. It causes stress. Yeah.
So one will suffer.
If it was true what you're saying, which I don't think it is, you couldn't put a strong cow with a weak cow, or a strong donkey with a weak donkey.
But it's not so dramatic, the difference between...
Who says? A big, strong ox and a little, tiny cow is not dramatic. You decide it. You live in a cow's world. How do you know?
You get in the point.
It could be that a strong donkey and a strong ox could be similar. I don't know. That's not the point. The point here is it's not a question of sharing loads fully or not. That's not the issue here. The issue here is causing anxiety. causing discomfort. That says very, very clear. But like I said, others maintain that it's the Ramban does follow a little bit the idea of Ramban Meir Nevuchim, that it could bring to worse things. But here's the bottom line. Even if it doesn't bring to worse things, it's still prohibited. You have to understand that. Right. Tertius is prohibited, it's prohibited. And now the third thing. And the third thing is much less graphic. It's very basic. Gedilim tasselacha. Make yourself tzitzis. Make yourself tassels. This is a clear mitzvah of the idea of tassels. However, pardon me, I skipped verse 11. Go back to verse 11. Leisilbash shatnez tzemer ufishtim yachad. Do not wear shatnez. And we'll talk about what that means in a minute, the different approaches. We'll see what Rashi says. But do not wear shatnez, which I'm going to tell you is a forbidden mixture. And this is specific. This is talking about tzemer ufishtim. This is specific to the idea of wool and linen yachdav together. So Rashi says, shatnez. The term shatnez is l'shein eruv. It comes from the terminology of mixture. V'rabbeinu perishu, and our rabbis explained that within this word, which means mixture, the Torah is actually alluding to the kind of mixture. That there are actually, it's a conjunctive word. That in the word shatnez is included the idea of shua. Shua means combing. So you could comb wool and linen together. Comb them out. Make a common fleece out of the two. Then there's the idea of nuz. Nuz means, so tavui. Tavui means to spin them. To spin them into thread. So you take the little strands, you spin till it becomes a thread. And lastly is nuz. Nuz is actually what we call weaving. To make the fabric. And the prohibition of shatnez is when you do it in this fashion, min ha-Torah, when they actually become seamlessly enmeshed together. So you comb them, you spin them, you weave them together, you do something like this where they become united together. But you can wear a linen shirt and a wool jacket. That would not be a biblical prohibition, even if you put a gartle on top of the two. Even if you kind of put a sash and wrapped it around, that's not prohibited. So prohibition is when they are actually tied together.
But it is rabbinic prohibition, isn't it?
It would be, no. Yeah. To wear a gartle on such a thing, would not. But it would not be, that would not be prohibited at all, actually.
To wear wool and linen together in two different...
To wear wool and linen together, to wear a linen shirt and a wool jacket would not be a prohibition. No. But to button them together, for example, or to fasten them together would be rabbinically prohibited. Oh, very good. So this is a little bit beyond today's the time we have. But you're right. Right. The Kohen Gadol's gartel, the sash, Kohen Gadol more than the sash. Every Kohen sash was made of wool linen together. And the Kohen Gadol actually had specific garments that were made of wool linen together. So Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor, also known as the Rivash, but as an acronym, he says because the idea of Una, he says therefore nobody should use the king's scepter. That makes it off limits. This is used specifically. That's the reasoning that he applies. And the Das, Zekein and the Balei HaTesvos give us a similar reasoning. They say that the Pereuches, that the curtain which served as a separation between the idea of what was holy and holy of holies, the two areas of scrimmage in the Beis HaMikdash, the Pereuches was also made of Tzemer U'Pishtim. And therefore Hashem said, this is for me, not for you. The Chizkuni says, on a very literal level, in the beginning of creation, the Torah's narrative of humanity's development, the first homicide is who? Cain and Abel. So Cain kills Hevel. What was the dispute? How did it all begin? So Hevel brought me bichreis tzaynei. He brought from the choicest of the sheep, wool. And Hevel brought, he was a farmer, he brought from flax seeds. So since there was a noxious mix and it caused the homicide, the Eibishter says, don't mess around. Don't bring these mixes together. All right. Of course, there's much, much more to say about all these things. But seeing as we have limited time, we have covered the three major prohibited mixtures, substance mixtures. Now, here's the question. Here's a question. You closed your chumashim too fast. Take a look in the chumash. And you'll see, if you look in the chumash, you see a little samach. There's a little samach. L'sizra kelayim, the prohibition of the forbidden seeds, has a samach afterwards. You know what the samach stands for? stands for stuma. Because there's two ways we can have a different parsha in the Torah. They're like paragraphs in the Torah. There are sealed paragraphs and open paragraphs, which simply stated means leaving more space or less space. So after we talk about the notion of the prohibited mixture, the planting, we say it's the end of a portion. Sealed, stuma, but the end of a portion. And then the next two psukim are in a portion unto themselves. Verse 10 and 11 are in a portion by themselves. Then the next one verse is in a portion by itself. But that actually makes sense. The next verse, the mitzvah of tzitzis. The mitzvah of tzitzis is somehow connected to the mitzvah of klayim, but it's a separate mitzvah. So you have a separate mitzvah. And since Parshat Kisetze has more mitzvahs than any other parsha in the Torah, so we have these portions, paragraph, 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 paragraph. What's the obvious question?
Why do you need to indicate?
Why is it separate? Why is the kilai hakedem, the planted prohibited mixture, in a separate parsha, in a separate portion, a separate paragraph from the other mixtures? The mixture of the animals being yoked together and the mixture of the weaving or the spinning, the woolen linen together.
Good question.
I said that was a question. So on page Chav Dalad in the Beauty of Chumash, we have in the Simon Yud Zayin of Parshas Kisei, the Rebbe says, Shleishas Yisurim Shev Psukim Elum, the three prohibitions talked about in these three psukim. I called it 50 shades of forbidden mixtures, but that's just a joke. There are only really three shades of forbidden mixtures. So in the three shades of forbidden mixtures, or three, it's not three shades, there are actually many shades, but there are three kinds, three dimensions. We have the Isur, the prohibition in the Torah of Irbuv ben Shnei Minim Shoinim. The Torah prohibiting the mixture of different substances. And within that we have Zeria Mine Zroim. We have the idea of the things which are forbidden planting. And that's Shoinim Yachta, that's together, that's one. Then we have Charisha B'Shnei Mini Balachayim, plowing, or really yoking, harnessing, two different kinds of animals, or the wearing of begodim, levishas beged, ha'asim mishnei mini chemre ariga, of different kinds of substances, and we have them together. So the Rebbe says, yachadim zeis, even though it seems that all these three things are one parsha, chalukas ha'parshias mefriya b'teira mafrida b'ne isa harishen l'shnei ha'isur ma'boyim. The Torah makes a division, a space, drives a wedge between the first prohibition and the next two. And the obvious question is why? What's the difference? On the surface, all three represent the notion of the prohibited mixture. So the Rebbe suggests something which is really new. It's a new approach. It's very logical. He says, Chalukah zu niva'as mehevdil yesedi. This division of the Torah, kind of, no pun intended, but the fact that it's not together, that's not yoked together, that these mitzvahs are separated into two parshias, comes from a fundamental difference between the first prohibition and the second two. Be'isurei klai hakedem, when we talk about the prohibition of planting, specifically here the planting of grape seed, hata'aruvais himuhusis upnimius, the mixture is actually, it's an essential mixture. It's a profoundly intrinsic mixture. Because what happens is, hazroim hanizroim yachad, the seed, which both rot together, they basically experience full meltdown. They lose, the bulb loses its surface, its structure, the structure collapses. And what happens then is, a process begins in which what was once a seed triggers a process from which there's eventual growth. But since there was two different seeds that were planted at the same time, in the same handful, mismazgim, they mix together. This is what we would call in scientific terminology a full genetic mix. A full genetic cross. Kedei hatzmachas tvua mesug chadash. And you actually get a different kind of product. It's actually a different product. It's sheba me'urav v'maminim shoinim yachad. If you were to scientifically analyze, you would find wheat strains, some of the wheat structure. You would also find some of the grape structure. You could actually identify it because there's a different molecular structure, subatomic structure for each of these things. And it could even look different. The grapes will have like a wheat look, maybe a wheat taste, or a wheat texture. Something would change. The mixture is profound. You cannot pull the grape apart, pull the wheat out of the grape and make this into bread and that into wine. You couldn't do that. You would have a different kind of grape. Maybe it would ferment differently. I don't know what the difference would be. That's not relevant. Surely there would be a difference because it has a different structure. And if it has a different molecular structure, so then the chemical composition is different. It's a different reality. So that's the first kind. But Be'isr Kalai Harisha, when we talk about planting together, which over here it's not referring to the act of planting, but rather the act of plowing or the act of actual farming, when you're using the animals together, Medubar Be'irv Chitzaini, it's only a superficial mixture. The donkey and the cow do not become, they're not mated as one. They don't produce a different kind of fruit or a different kind of vegetable, a different kind of grain, because the ground was broken by a donkey and a cow together. A furrow is a furrow is a furrow. Makes no difference. Hasher v'achamer mitzdar from rak l'shem pula. What happens in unison is the movement of the wagon of plow. That's what happens together. Ach b'sefer shel davar, in the end, heim nisharim shnei balachayim nifradim. When this activity is over, you unyoke them, and when you finish unyoking them, what happens? The donkey goes his way, and the cow goes his way. So they're not really, they don't become like one together. The truth is, the same thing happens by shatnes. Isur shatnes chal gam b'mikreshat semer v'apishtan uvdu b'nifrat. It's true. You could sometimes comb them together and spin them together to the point that it would be impossible for you to separate from one another. That's true. But the Torah doesn't only prohibit when it's a full-on mixture, which even then, chemically, you could separate them. You could still separate it. But even if they're actual separate articles of cloth or separate threads, but you could actually pull them apart, which is what we do. We check our clothes for shatnas. You should. Checking your suit for shatnas is biblical. And sometimes, especially in German-made suits, for some strange reason, there is shatnas in there. And oftentimes the shatnas is in the collar. And sometimes it's the stuffing. And sometimes it's the actual piece of cloth that's used underneath the lapel. The actual cloth is sometimes made of shatnas. Sometimes the threads. They check all kinds of things today. They check the threads that you sew the buttons on. So, and a lot of times the shatnas, you bring it to the shatnas checker, he'll ask you to fill in, do you want us to call you or do you want us to remove it? There are times they can't remove it. They say, look, we can't take your suit apart. You better return your suit. But most of the time they say, we could remove it. We could take out the stuffing, replace the stuffing. We can change some of the threading. We could change it. So we're not talking about a mixture which is profound. Aha, says the Rebbe. And this profundity is communicated to us in the structure of the Torah's verses. The first kind of mixture, which is absolutely intrinsic and profound, is in a frame of its own. The second two, which are not as intrinsic and profound, are considered to be in separate. Even though, generally speaking, we would say this is encompassed by the dimensions, the different mitzvahs that are connected to kilayim, the forbidden mixtures. Nonetheless, the Torah makes a distinction between the profoundly mixed and the superficially mixed. And there's much to say about that. But now it's time to die.
But other mixtures are not in the